G'day guys and welcome to another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'm your host, Sammy Gordon, and we've got back in the studio the big silver dog himself, aka Gandalf, direct from Mordor, otherwise known as Melbourne, Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim.
Mate, how it are has you? Been called a lot of things, Melbourne, but definitely not that.
Not so, Mordor.
No.
Gandalf has left the building.
He has, and he's up here on the GC, and it's good to be back
mate,
here
it's
with
great
you,
to have
buddy.
You back here, mate. It's
You're
great.
Looking good.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. You're looking weathered, like a wizard. But mate, welcome back. It's good to have you back
the
Sunshine
back.
State.
The wizard is back. And a big hello to all of our listeners out there. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're keeping busy.
It's good, mate. It's good to have you back, mate. It's been a little while. Man, there was an episode or a couple of episodes I've been wanting to cover here. People have been writing in, mate, asking us about mindset. How do you deal with the mindset? If you go all the way back to episode number one, mate, that was the first thing that we covered, episode number one, and we haven't covered it in months or really touched on it. And I think the people out there, be it clients of Australian Property Scout or even people out there having a crack doing it themselves. There's a few people out there. Obviously, it's been a tumultuous sort of time in the last 12 to 18 months in property. And there's a lot of people wanting to know, how do we deal with, well, especially, mate, even yourself, you got a very large portfolio yourself up to the size of what mine is too. Like, how do we deal with portfolios this big when people are struggling with one property or two properties? And I think a really interesting thing, mate, is I always find it's actually the very start is the hardest. It's as you get further through, you start to build a bit of a you know, chainmail armor sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Not as much affects you, but really, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to dive through mindset, and we're going to make this a little bit more regular now because the amount of people have been writing in asking about this. And today's episode or today's topic on mindset is overcoming your worst enemy, Jimmy.
Well, you are my worst enemy.
I was about to say you are as well. Should we just duke it out? Just take his go or what?
It's on. The silver dog versus the bull shark.
Tune in, guys. Jump on YouTube. This is on.
Now, the thing I love about this and what it shows for our audience out there, Sammy, is everyone knows about the numbers. And the thing I love about the mindset side of things is that there are certain things that are tangible within property.
Yes.
Right? And you're a big, yeah, I mean, you're good at this stuff. The numbers, you know exactly what, you know, the ROI is, what the yields are, what discount we're buying in.
Yes.
What are the values?
Terrible at maths at school. When it comes to property and money, I do all right.
Put a dollar sign in front of it and he's all over.
I'm good.
Like a fat kid in a candy store.
Like Gandalf on the Fresh Wizard. Fresh wand.
So there's two parts, really, I find fascinating. It's the tangible part, which we've spoken about at length, and people can find all of this information online. And I've been guilty of it. You go through all the courses, you read everything, you attend the seminars, but there is the intangibles, and mindset is one of those things. I call it the blockages.
Mm.
I know you have different types of blockages usually.
Yes, well, that's why I didn't want to call you. You were talking about blockages. I was like, mate, I don't want to know what's going on in that body of yours, but let's
well,
keep
it's
it.
3,000 years old.
It is, a bit it of, looks it.
There's
it
a few old it. Pipes there. However, the intangibles.
Do they work? Do they still work?
They
do,
still work
do the pipes still work,
oh,
mate?
They do. Don't you worry.
Oh, moving
so
on.
The intangibles for people listening out there, and if you're driving along or you're going for a walk or wherever you are, there are a few things that both Sammy and I are going to talk about, and I'm sure some of you have related to these, and some people have written in about these particular hurdles, and so that's why I think it's a great title that you came up with.
Thank you.
Often you are your own worst enemy.
Yes.
Do you find that?
100%, man. No one will get in your way more than you will.
Yes.
You know, it's the oldest saying in the book, you know, get out of your own way and you'll make things happen. So yeah, man, 100%. You're your own worst enemy with a lot of different things because you generally will overthink things. So mate, I think this is great that you want to dive into this.
I do.
And get into
I've got
it.
A whole bunch of different points. And also there are certain things that are conscious and certain things that are subconscious on different levels. So just be aware of these. And if we can help you in some way, obviously we're not experts in this kind of space, but if we can share some of our story and this can help you, then that's definitely been worth it.
Just so, a quick question popped to my head. Are you an expert on anything or?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. I'm a really good pencil pusher.
Pencil pusher? You're right, mate.
Yeah, I'm pretty
Go
good.
On, keep going.
The first one,
yes.
And this is where it all starts for, I think, a lot of people. And this is more of a subconscious thing. It is your own money story.
Mm.
If I can start with that, because we're all being brought up
Like your relationship with money, right? Like how you were brought up with money.
Yeah, that's why I call it the money story. It's just that whatever you've always known from a young age, you know, your household around your parents and just the way you've been brought up to associate with money.
Yes.
So I was curious from your side of things, and I know you've touched on this before, but have you found that this was a bit of a blockage or something that got in the way for you when you were first starting out, your association with money?
Yeah, definitely. So I was brought up in like a very frugal family. We didn't spend money, like we didn't fritter it away. We were very careful with it. And it was something like it really helped me when I was younger in terms of saving, but it also made it actually really hard to know what to spend money on and really kind of, I guess, go through that in terms of spending money and whatnot too. So yeah, man, like it was, and then even in terms of debt, for me was really hard to kind of get my head around when I was young as well, because I had a family that was like, oh, you just want to like save as much as you can, buy something, pay it off, be done. You know what I mean? Pay with cash, you know what I mean? And like, that's what, that was what kind of how I was brought up with it. And then, yeah, man, it wasn't until, obviously, most people know the story, I bought first property, gave myself a bit of a bachelor's in property by going consuming a lot of content that my mindset and my relationship with money really changed and obviously for the better.
Yeah, it is interesting. If I was taking that little bit further from my side, obviously coming from an Italian-Lebanese background where cash is very important.
Why is cash so important?
Well, what's with wogs and cash? I mean, come on. You know, it's your birthright. But no one likes cash more than the Europeans.
It's because
right?
They just want to pile it up and just go buy a shop full of baklava and they're happy.
So I think from a young age, I mean, if I was to be completely vulnerable and be completely honest, my parents were pretty useless with money in the sense that my father used to love, he was very lazy, never really wanted to work. Loved the TAB.
Right.
Was an expert in the TAB.
Okay.
Despite not winning a lot of money,
so
mind
he's an
you.
Expert at spending money in the TAB, yes. not on wins. Yes.
But you know what? Anyone who bets on anything, you know what? The same old story?
Tell me.
I missed out. I just had that one horse. If only the four came after the seven, the three, the bloody three.
Yeah,
So growing up, I always had an association with money that there wasn't a lot of it. Not that we were poor, we were very comfortable in the sense of you got everything that you wanted, but there was just never an abundance. And when
kind of that typical middle class, right? Like, and I was the same. Like, you have what you need, but you don't have an excess, and you also, you know, you're not living in squalor as well.
But to take it from an investing perspective, my parents never invested. I think my dad's only probably owned two or three homes in his whole life, so he never really invested in anything.
Yeah.
So from an educational, it just wasn't part of the culture of to invest.
Fair enough.
Which probably drove, and I think the same with you, drove the need to want to learn more.
Mm.
So I think for wherever you're starting, that first one is your own money story. It's just understanding whatever it is. Don't hold it against your parents. I think I found that I was holding on to that resistance, and you almost. At first, hold it in a negative against the people around you, especially your parents. But once you get over that and just take ownership of your own shit, then you sort of relinquish, you get rid of all of that excuse.
Yeah.
Did you find that?
Man, I think the biggest changes I've ever had in my life is when I kind of like let go of blaming. Well, not for one, I guess it kind of is, right? Like blaming other people for stuff in your life that's going wrong or whatever. Ah, it's my parents' fault. It's this person's, that person's. It's your own fault. Everything in life, where you are right now, is a direct correlation to what you have done in your life to get you where you are.
Or haven't done.
Yeah, right? But they're both, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to change this, you just need to change your relationship with it, how you view it and how you work with it as well. And I think obviously listening to this podcast and consuming the right content is what will help you change that sort of outlook and relationship with it. But yeah, the sooner that you take that away from being someone else's problem or result of someone else's actions or whatever, and the sooner you take ownership for it and change it, the sooner you will literally change it and benefit from that as well. Mm. And I'll actually say, mate, it wasn't that many years ago that I had a little bit of a negative mindset around a few things, and literally that was the last little piece in the puzzle that was holding me back from what I've been able to change myself and turn myself into. And it was kind of moving away from a few people in my life and just changing on that level, changed my relationship with money, my relationship with other people, how I viewed other people, and just worried about being in my own lane, succeeding in that. That's changed everything for me on that side as well. So don't worry about trying to blame anyone else for it. Just educate yourself on it and then move past it.
Yeah, get over it and just focus move on past what it. You can yeah. do, what you can control.
There's no point living in the past with this shit. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't help you. You look forward, you look at what you can do, and then you change it.
Okay, that's the first one. So tick against that one. The second one, I find you hear this a lot, is I'd love to get into investing, but I don't have any money. I don't earn enough.
Yeah. Come on, man.
What do you think about that?
That's a cop out. That's a cop out. It is a cop out, man. Like, I understand people are in bad situations and whatnot, and it can take time. It took me 3 years making $35,000 a year to save my first deposit.
When was this? So people have context.
I was 19. So I was in 2009. I'd been saving pretty hard for like 3 years. I was like 16, 17 or whatever it was up till I was 19. When I first left school at 16, it was like 3-4 years essentially that I was saving for to save that deposit. It took me ages. It doesn't matter. Like, all right, you don't make enough. Okay, it might take you longer. It just changes the game, changes the picture. It just makes that first deal so important. But I personally think it's a cop out because, like, if there's always things you can change in your scenario to help you.
Yep.
To help you get there. All right, there is a tiny, tiny minority, and if you're within that minority, there are in that position where you can't fix things. Now, you've got a few kids, you literally can't move in anywhere else, you're at the bottom end of what you can afford, all the rest of it, all that sort of stuff. There's a tiny percentage that are in that boat, right? I feel for those guys. Outside of that, everyone else has the ability to do it. It just might take a while to do it, but that's all part of it. And that's why when it also comes to that is then the first deal becomes so important because you need to replicate and multiply that money so you can keep moving and keep doing more deals. But you look at that one, mate, like it's one of those ones I always cross it out because it's like, if I could do it back then making as little as I was making, anyone can do it.
So on that then, would you say that the question, if people are listening to this and saying, you know what, I don't earn enough, is it really an earning issue or is it a spending issue? Because some people, I think, if you really, and trying to give people out there tools to actually really look at your situation, often as your story, you had 35K. It was all about the amount you saved.
Yes.
So if that is an excuse for you or something that you're struggling to overcome, maybe start looking at what you're really spending your money on.
Yep.
And you'll quickly find the holes.
So the example I gave before of like people who maybe are like right at the bottom there in really tough position, everyone else, like as shit as it is, like again, 99 people out of 100 have the ability if they really needed to, especially young people, 20, potentially 30s, whatever, if they're not married and kids and the rest of it, they've got the potential for 1 year to move back in with their parents, most people, or they downgrade what they're spending on in rent. But if you can move back in with your parents for 12 months, save yourself $400 a week in rent, there's $20,000, plus how much extra you're not spending by probably not drinking as excessively every weekend or partying, all the rest of the bullshit, you dig in for 1 year. Almost everyone, I kind of really, really think if you dig in for 1 year, even if it's just enough to buy you one bottom end deal to get kickstarted, and then maybe you move back out. But if you buy that proper deal, that's going to set the foundations for the whole piece. Man,
on that, you know what you're saying, moving back in.
Yeah.
And again, being vulnerable for people out there.
Are you living with your mum now?
I moved back with my mum when I came back from overseas. Okay. I was about to turn 30.
Yeah, right.
So people are worrying about moving out in their early 20s. I mean, of course.
How long ago was that?
I don't know, 1965.
Jesus. Fucking hell. There you go, folks. He's nearing on 100.
So when I came back from overseas, because I was starting my new business, obviously the first year of income from that business was like $18,000, right? So I didn't want to be back there. But I knew I had to do what I needed to do in order to build up the business. Yep. So I know all about that in the sense of not wanting to do something, but you have to.
You may say something as well. This is a mindset episode, right? So I'm maybe going to be a little bit brutal on this side. Like this, if you want this shit, like if you actually want to succeed in this and that's your excuse, like make some sacrifices. If you don't make enough, either go find a job that pays you more, ask for a promotion, go do something else. Because that was something I should have done looking back. I should have done that. If there's no other avenue for you to make more money, how can you reduce your cost base?
Yes.
That is honestly, that's an excuse. If this is mindset, if you want to get on top of this thing, you have to make some sacrifices for 12, 24 months to get yourself in the market and kick it all off. And then change the game from there.
This is the kind of stuff I'm looking for from you, the bull shark. Let's not be a little dolphin in the...
Oh, wow.
Come on, start thrashing around a little bit.
The shark, he's
changed, hasn't he?
The dolphin wants me to take him out.
Number three then, I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
Number three, the biggest... I thought you were telling me to do this tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Okay. That's the...
Terrible excuse.
Yeah. Well, this is... Some people just don't have the time. I don't have the time... I'll do it tomorrow.
I can't remember what potty it was on. It was a couple of months ago. I remember because I was at the gym when I was listening to it. And you and I were talking about something and was just like, the biggest thing is like whenever you say, oh, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Oh, I'm going to start on Monday. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. You never end up doing it. When you're G'd up to do something and you want to go and do something, maybe you're listening to this potty right now and you're thinking about a few things that you know you can go and cut. Don't think, I'm going to go cut them tomorrow. I'm going to cut them this weekend when I've got some time. I'll go cut them this weekend and I'll take care of it then. If you're motivated, do something, do it straight away. Whether it's go and bloody, you know, cut different things you can save. Go ask for your promotion. Go do this, go do that. Mm. If you're listening to this in your lunch break and you know that you're due for a promotion, walk into your boss's office, Asavo, and tell him, mate, I need this as a pay increase, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, take some bloody balls from this thing and go on push the envelope where you need to do it.
Because I like that.
The old, I'll wait for tomorrow, it never, ever happens. It's an excuse.
Mm. And I made that excuse many times. To be honest with you, I mean, think about it. I didn't really start investing properly.
So have I, mate. Yeah, I know, anyone that says they haven't done that is full of shit. Like, everyone at the start, that is something that happens. It happens to all of us. The sooner you move past that, the stronger and the quicker you'll grow.
The difference for you, though, because you're younger than I am, right? So I didn't really take action on the investing side of things till, I mean, properly till, what, 39?
Yeah.
So if people are listening out there thinking, oh, woe is me, and you're in your late 20s or you're in your early 30s, or even if you're in your 40s or whatever, it is never too late. So I think
we're going to do an ep on this.
But you know what it is about the tomorrow thing? And Anthony Robbins talks about this a lot. It's when the pain...
For those who aren't on a first name basis with Anthony Robbins, that's Tony Robbins for everyone
else.
Well,
I call him Anthony. Okay. It's his Christian name.
Righto, mate. Anthony Robbins. Jesus. Is that Tony? Is that Tony Robbins?
Big T.
Big T. We are talking about Tony Robbins. You call him Anthony.
Well, OG days, Anthony Robbins.
Wow. Well, back when he started 40 years ago. He's been doing this for a while.
He's the godfather.
He is the godfather.
I can't even remember what I was saying.
I don't either. Sorry, mate. I just don't know who the hell calls Tony Robbins Anthony.
I literally have lost my full train of thought because of you, you asshole. So what did he talk about? Oh, no.
He's back.
If the pain when the pain of being in your current circumstance is that great, that the difference between where you are now and where you want to be, when that gap is that far, that's when you take action.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people out there, if you're too comfortable and there's not enough pain, you don't take action. Mm. And when I lost a lot of money during COVID because of the businesses, that pain and that gap between where I was, where I really was and where I wanted to be, that's what really spurred on the change. So it's interesting for you listening out there, if you notice that, get a kick in your ass, because that's true.
Can I say something to you, right? People ask me, I never really thought about this until Anthony Robbins came into our podcast. Fucking knows who that is.
Let's get him on the show.
He's coming in a few weeks, I think, guys. Now I've lost my train of thought. Here we go. Hang on. It was, people ask me all the time, right? They always ask me, jump on strategy sessions or like, you know, clients that come back around for their second, third, fourth deals or whatever. They're like, Sammy, mate, why are you still doing this?
Yes.
You don't need to do it, right? It's exactly what Anthony Robbins just went into about comfort zones, right? I became extremely comfortable by getting uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like sitting around doing nothing anymore. I trained myself to want to get out of my comfort zone and go do things, call people I didn't want to call but knew that I had to call. You know, send the emails, make the phone calls, have the meetings that I didn't really want to do, go have the podcast, the interviews, all the rest of stuff that I didn't feel comfortable doing until they felt comfortable. And then it's like, well, why are you still pushing yourself so hard? And for one, I love what I do and helping clients and going through all that. But like, I can't just sit around and do nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I love constantly pushing myself to the uncomfortable limits that I know will move the needle and change the bar. Because you don't just like, what you'll find as well is like, you're going to get to a point where you've achieved a lot of what you want to achieve or really pushed hard for it. It's going to be very hard or seem very strange to just sit and enjoy it. And you might want to do it for a while, but if you actually achieve your goals, and it will always depend on your age bracket, right? Like you're probably very close to retirement. Once you hit it, you're probably going to enjoy the fruits of your labor, 80s, 90s.
Just want a cup of tea and a warm blanket.
Right? But the other guys that probably hit it, like they may hit it in their 40s and 50s, and some guys are going to hit it in their 30s. Yeah. You know, you're going to hit it. You're probably going to go enjoy it for a couple of years. And then this is what I love. Absolutely love is then you're going to be like, all right, that was cool. What's next? And that's why for me, people ask me like, why do I still do it? Why does it work? Because this is what I love. You know what I mean? Like I love doing this now. And this is like constantly pushing myself. And I think that's the thing. Like this is my why of going super hard. But in that sense of like getting comfortable doing those uncomfortable things, that is what will move the needle and change it. And I guarantee you, like I said, if you're listening to this in your lunch break or maybe on the way to work, going and having that uncomfortable discussion with your boss who maybe for the last year or two has thought, fuck, I wonder when Jimmy, is going to come and ask me for that pay increase because he's bloody overdue for it.
Mm.
But he hasn't asked me, so I'm not going to bother doing it yet.
Of course,
do you know how many people would be sitting there thinking that? Or there's that opportunity that could go to that next pay level with that as well. So I just think like, you never know, you know, you'll never get what you don't ask for.
Exactly, yeah. Can I add one little practical step for people in this one? And this is what a lot of people
say. We got any time? Let's just went for a massive ramble.
That's awesome. No, that was really, this is valuable stuff. I mean, I think this is a great episode just to really change the approach and on the investing side. But I think from a practical example or a tool for people out there.
The same example was impractical?
No, that was a good one too. But often sometimes it seems so difficult to make that big step. And it seems the blockage is you, it almost seems too difficult.
Yeah.
So start with something, like even just little
baby steps, yeah, guys.
Anything.
The big steps are the hardest. Do the baby steps.
Even if it is like, say, if it's booking in a meeting or asking your boss for a meeting, or if it is getting a booking in for a call or doing one little, like when you get motivated to do something, you have to take one step in the action of that to create the momentum. Don't create this massive project that is just
you'll
so difficult.
You'll never do it.
So start with something really small. I found that really helpful. Just that little thing. And then the next little thing. So these little hurdles that you overcome and then you get bigger and then the momentum builds.
That's where you start to get bulletproof, man.
That's right.
You start to get bulletproof and very, very little can affect you. It goes the same with property. It goes the same with your mindset in this style of thing that we're talking about now, like trying to level up everything.
All right. So I think we've nailed that one. The next point, and this is a lot, and I can relate to this, is what stops you is the inner dialogue that I don't know enough. When you were facing that, because when I mean, for me personally, and I was too embarrassed to call up agents.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to sound stupid. This guy's going to think I'm an idiot. And it was just my own inner insecurity that I just thought, you know what? I don't want to feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that it was stopping me and I knew that of what I needed to do, but I just couldn't take that next step until, again, it was that uncomfortable that I thought, I've got nothing to lose here. I've already lost a shit ton. I might as well.
I think there's two sides to this, right? And we're talking about getting started in your investing journey or buying your first property. What are we talking about?
I think because the mindset, especially initially, I'd say for people out there, a lot of people who have already started, they've got a few deals and they've got some momentum. I don't think they're going to have as many blockages or barriers as someone who's starting out.
Yep.
And a lot of people who are starting out, I think they feel like the biggest monster is ahead of them.
Yep.
So I think this is probably relating probably more to them initially. So what would you say?
Started out or just about to buy their first one?
Just about to start out or trying to improve their situation, right?
Okay. I'm going to take it to the people who are, they're about to buy a property, okay?
Well, they want to buy it. Like they're starting out, right?
Yeah. Right. Okay. So like if you're wanting to buy a property, and because you're talking about ringing agents and whatnot
Just starting, like shit, how do I get better? I need to improve my situation.
Okay. So the biggest thing, there's a few things here, okay? And I know I'm going to blow the old APS trumpet here a little bit, right? But let's say, if you're trying to upskill and gain as much knowledge as you can, I don't know when you're listening to this. This could have been as soon as it came out. You could have listened to this in 12 months. I would go back and I'd listen to the full catalog, Scouting Australia podcast for one, because there is a lot of gold in here that's going to help you upskill your ability here and your knowledge base. And that is what you want to build. You want to build the knowledge base, okay? If we go one step further and we're talking about first deals, okay? If I look back at my own portfolio, and I've done well, but I look at the first... I'm 14 years in now. I look at the first 7 years, very slow, all over the place. Did well, bought well almost every deal, all over the place. No direction.
Then that was 7 years. That's a long time.
Seven years, man. And then I look at what some of the guys have done, guys and girls have done within the business, like working with APS, and what they've done in a 2, 3, 4 year window compared to what I did in seven. They're miles in front of where I was, especially in the first 2 years. What I'm getting at here is like, whether it's us or whatever, if you're listening to us, I'm guessing you're loving the way that we invest in the style that we invest in and the fact that we care so much about our clients. But let's say you jump on board with someone like us that is a mentor for you that can walk you through it. And for one, even if it's just for the first couple of deals to get you started so you learn what you should be doing properly and get you on the right train. Because the issue is, let's say it takes you 3 years, say that first deposit, and then you go off and you try and do it yourself or you go employ some other terrible BA and you buy the wrong property, you're back to square one, right? If you start and you build in the right way and then you're shown properly how to build and strategize and structure your portfolio properly, that is going to save you a lot of headache. It's like for me, I consumed a shitload of content for 7 years and still was like a bit all over the place until it finally clicked and it really started to grow and take off, right? Mm. But I made a lot of mistakes there. I lost money in different things as well, different experiences and whatnot that I lost it to. This is where if you get this part right, you will massively fast track your journey, right? Mm. So I feel like that's the biggest thing. If there is a big knowledge gap, either spend the time and upskill yourself and get as much as you can, but you also have to be super relevant and honest with yourself on this. If you don't have the time to go and execute properly on it, employ someone that will do it at an extremely high standard for you. And the right person should at least be making their fee or more on the way into a deal anyway. So you're going to be break even or in front and you're going to be in the right market and have everything taken care of from you on that side. And you should really be able to learn about the process, learn especially on the way of first few deals if you do really want to do it yourself long term, yeah. Which is fine.
I bought my first property, I think I told you, back when I was 23, and I bought the wrong property at that time. Yes. I probably should never have bought that. I didn't really know what I was doing, yep. Right? Didn't have a lot of influence. And anyway, if I fast forward, and then the next property I bought was through a different BA, which I've mentioned on this. Yep. And again, I had a bad experience in 2015, probably should never have bought that. It wasn't until, and I think just tying into what you're saying, is that self-awareness of wherever you're at. For me personally, I've only ever bought two properties on my own. Yep. That one back in when I was 23 yep. and another one when I was 40.
Yeah.
Right? And that was my primary place of residence now. Yeah. I only bought that after I'd done four deals with you, which gave me confidence and knowledge from working with you and understanding more things that put me in a better position to buy my primary place of residence, which was obviously in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. But my self-awareness was enough that I know that I don't know enough as – I know a lot more than a lot of people, but I don't know enough – more than you. So if I'm going to go out and buy a deal, the reason why I chose you is because you're more knowledgeable than me at this.
Yeah.
So I was prepared to pay you, and this is not to promote APS or whatever, but know where you're at.
Yeah.
So if that should never be an excuse, I don't know enough, because you either don't know enough or you're too much of a tight ass to spend the money on getting someone who's good who can deliver the results.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be an excuse anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I like that, man. That's a great point. That's a great point.
There's a really good lead in to the next one. Okay. And that is the circle of influence. Now, I know we're going to go into a lot of great detail about this because we sort of split it up into two parts. There's the circle of influence in your inner circle, like within the people that are directly close by you. And obviously the people that you engage and, you know, property managers and so forth. But what I wanted to really dive into here and get your view is the circle of influence that are impacting your thoughts.
Yes.
And the way you go about your decisions.
Yes.
And more often than not, that's your spouse, your parents, your siblings,
what you consume and what you consume, what content you consume.
Yeah.
Media.
Eah, could be all of that.
Dude,
but don't you think it starts in it more so like the first conversations you normally have around wealth and stuff is usually your partner, right?
Yeah,
then your parents, siblings, mates.
Yeah. But dude, if you're sitting on, if you're driving to and from work or whatever, and you got news on in the morning, you get home every night and you switch on the news as well, dude, that's part of your circle of influence. That's what you're consuming.
So my question to you is, and I know you've touched on this before, but have you overcome certain things from your side of things with your family or your friends?
100%. We've covered this in the portfolio.
Some people who haven't listened to those episodes, I just want to give them a bit of, because that'll get them to go back and listen to that.
So like my family was very, They were okay for me to jump in and buy one property. Okay. They were supportive of that. As soon as I went past one property, what are you doing? Are you serious? When I got to like 10, I stopped telling them.
They were scared, right?
Yeah. They were scared. They were nervous. They're like, oh, what are you doing? Like, blah, blah, blah.
You're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. They thought they were going to have to bail me out or something. I don't know. They thought they were going to bail me out, but that's what they kind of, you know, were thinking it was going down that path. And yeah, man, like it was a lot of external sort of negative sort of voices around me and whatnot as well that I just stopped telling people of what I was doing. Friends as well was a tricky one because like some friends were super supportive and then some friends were just like, they just turned into dicks about it. You know what I mean? I was just like, oh, fuck, I wouldn't even bother bringing it up around them. Whenever they'd ask me stuff, I was like, I just got a couple, man. Like I don't even have the others anymore. Like you just try and deflect from the conversation because it was just like, there was no point engaging, you know? And then the other big one was media, man, in the news. I think I said this in a month or so ago and I can't remember what we're talking about. And the fact of when I was like in my early to mid 20s or something, I just ended up turning off the news. There was someone told me, they made a comment once of like, anything you really need to know out there that's going to be on the news, if it's that important, you'll hear about it. Mm. You know what I mean? When I got told that, the day that I got told that, I remember switching it off because I was like, that's so true. You consume all this bullshit that comes through on the radio, on the TV, all this stuff that comes through and it fills your headspace, it fills your mind. It's that, you know, people think it's the whatever gospel because it's on TV or on the radio or whatever. It just consumes your mind with all this bullshit that you don't need to hear. Yeah. Realistically, if anything happens out there in the world that you really need to know about, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like there's no point listening to it. Even in terms of interest rates, you're going to hear about it. When interest rates go up, they go down, whatever happens, you're going to hear about it. It's, you don't need to listen to the news for them then to cut into a 30-minute segment about how the whole world's going to end because we just had another rate increase. You know what I mean?
That's like, right. Yeah.
You know, or when they get cut, oh my God, the biggest boom in the world's coming. You know what I mean? Like block out the external noise and just stick to your path because that's how you'll succeed.
Stay in your own lane. And I think that circle of influence is a really key point. And I found from my experience, and we've mentioned this on the podcast before, that my first experience with my family about sort of wealth or business was when I wanted to open up a gym with a couple of mates and everyone said, this is the worst thing you can ever do. And I know I mentioned this, but just for the purposes of this little, it's quite relevant.
It is.
And they were all talking me out of it. What do you know? You're going to lose all your money. But my mate who had already opened three of these gyms, I remember he's been a mentor to me. I remember him saying, be wary of the advice you get from people who haven't done what you're trying to do. So take it with a grain of salt and just don't buy into it. You can listen to it and get everyone's opinion, but just think about it's a reflection of their story that generally what they're telling you. So you don't need to get into a conflict. You don't need to give them F you and all this other stuff. Yeah. You're just like, okay, cool. Yeah, no, I get it. That's where you're at.
You know, one of the trickiest things here as well, Jimmy, is people get excited when they go and buy property or they want to start buying property. And normally like your family will be happy for you on the first one. Okay. Oh, well done. You've done so well. Look at my boy or look at my brother, whatever. He's doing well. And then what you'll find is as you start to move beyond that one deal, especially if you work with us and you really want to scale and you want to build something big and you start having success, what you'll find is people will start getting bitter. It is a bad thing.
Jealousy? Or,
yeah. Man, we're in Australia, man. Tall poppy syndrome. It's a real thing. Man, 100% is a real thing. I would honestly say be very, very wary how many people you tell about this because people will not want to know you or they'll talk shit about you behind your back. Man, the biggest thing I could say is stay in your own lane. Tell people what you need to tell them. Don't tell them anymore. Try and build your circle of influence. Like we talk about this, like at the end of every ep, we say, if you take great value out of this, if there's someone you think would take great value out of this episode as well, or someone that needs to hear this ep, send it on to them. Because if you're surrounding yourself with people that are negative around your journey and what you're trying to do, you're going to have a negative mindset on it and you're not going to succeed. If you have people around you that are positive, then you will have a positive mindset and you will keep pushing to succeed and you will succeed.
Yes.
So you want to build your circle of influence and you want to build the people surrounding you in the right way. And if they're not in the right way, have a social relationship with them outside of it, but you don't talk to them about wealth building. You will build a different group of friends. And I have done this. You'll build a group of friends that are friends and they're mates and whatever. You don't talk about wealth. You don't talk about money. You know, they're your mates. They're probably people you've known for a lifetime. And then you can have your other people that talk on a completely different level. And they're going to be the people that come with you to the top and will help you get to the top. And that's why it's a beautiful thing when you do something like share this around, because there's going to be people that you may have left behind, but that actually maybe will be inspired by it and want to go with you on the journey as well.
That's so true. Do you find that?
Yeah, man, 100%.
And they come back and say, you know what? I remember you talking about that. When I get a bit more money, I want to come and speak to you. Do you 100%. Mind? That's pretty awesome, man. Isn't it?
Dude, I got mates that I played soccer with 20 years ago that I hadn't spoken to for years. And they saw me doing my stuff. And they're like, mate, this is amazing. Let's catch up. We'd catch up. We'd talk property. And then we go do deals together. And I got mates that I played with literally 5 years ago that invest with us now as well. And it's mad because you'll find when you get to a different level, it's very hard to have normal conversations because you start thinking on a very different level and you start operating on a very different level. It's cool when you can bring friends along the ride for you that will also have a great experience. And I'm not talking about bringing them along the ride and paying for everything. I'm talking about them going on their own journey, which you guys can share with each other.
And you're helping them, right?
Exactly, man. Yeah. But even if it was you with your mates and you're helping them, but you're helping them by being there in a circle of influence, the positive inner circle of influence. Literally can't stress it enough. Like this is what can help you get to the top.
We could go on this forever. And we did actually do an episode on circle of influence.
Go back to number one, guys.
Yeah, was it number one? Number two, I think. Number two, the circle of influence.
You're right, sorry.
So
go back to number one anyway. Give me an extra download.
So I think we've covered that in great detail. The next one was, and one of the biggest issues I find people, or the excuses rather, or obstacles, is people don't want the hassles of property. Mm. Too many hassles. I don't want to deal with tenants. What if they burn your house down?
Yeah. Insurance payout. Best. Please.
You know, what would you say to that? Did you ever have that as an issue? You thought, nah, tenants are pain in the ass. I don't want to deal with that shit.
Oh man, it comes and goes. Like, you know, well, it did very much at the start. Like what you find is like, the very first episode was bulletproof mindset, yeah? Intro on bulletproof mindset, yeah. Something like that. Man, like that is so important because, and as you go along, when you start out, it is natural. Every single person on their first and or second deal, maybe third, it can be a little disheartening at first. Like your first year in the game is always the hardest, right? Because you're like, oh, I thought it was going to be easy. I thought it was buy a property and make $1 million. You know, isn't it the easiest thing ever? But the reality sets in that you're dealing with people. You're dealing with property managers. You're dealing with trades, potentially. You're dealing with tenants and whatnot. Like it is, it's kind of like its own little living organism, okay? So that you've got to have a...
You got a manager, right?
Yeah, a level of management and handles on it, right? But what you find is like as you get bigger and bolder and essentially badder, you just get better and better at this thing. And it just, there's things that affect you, things that don't affect you. People ask me all the time, how do you handle a portfolio as big? Man, I don't even think about it. People ask me, just go, oh, I don't even know. It just ticks over in the background, does a thing. Like, oh, don't you have all these calls? I was like, no, property managers, they know when to call me. They know when not to call me.
Yeah.
Call me if there's a legitimate emergency. If you can't take care of it yourself or if you need my approval on something, no worries, call me. Otherwise, send me an email. Whatever. Yeah, take care of it. Send me an email. Whatever. I'll take care of what needs to be done. If it doesn't need to be done, don't put it on my table. You will learn, like it sounds like I'm very throwaway with that, but it takes time. I understand it takes time to like build yourself to that point where you can, because when you start, everything that pops up, you're like, you know what I mean? I've got to take care of all this little stuff. But what you find is like, as you get further along, you just realize it's just part of the journey. Yeah. You don't need to say yes to everything. It's okay to say no to some things. And it's okay to leave everything until it's like a little bit of a list and then a little bit of a list of maintenance. No worries. I'll send out the handyman.
Yeah.
$500 at tax time, whatever. I'll get it done just before the end of financial year.
On that though,
it's actually building like a hide, man, like a toughened hide to be able to handle it. It's normal.
The thing I like, the analogy, if I can give you one for that you can have, it's like an elastic band, I find. No, okay. But an elastic band. At first, you need more elasticity. The more that you can handle without snapping, that means the more load you can take, right? Whereas often, if you don't have a lot of elasticity, then you don't have the capacity to absorb a lot of crap.
Yes.
So what? Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is with your portfolio now, you've got a lot of elasticity that you can handle a lot more load because you're conditioned to dealing with that because you know the upside, right? So for people listening out there, if you're thinking about hassles from property, right? Whether if it's your first deal or like, for example, a recent deal that we settled, the first month's rent was all taken up.
It was all
just shit going wrong. Yeah, I was like, oh man. And still you feel like a kick in the nuts.
Yeah.
But
it's normal.
That's normal.
It's
normal.
And most of the time, guys, that's why I say your first year of owning a property is normally the most annoying because if you buy something, especially if you're buying at a discount and someone's making a loss, you know what I mean? And they're just trying to
fix something, right? Man, you're going to fix 100%. Something.
But like so often you'll buy it and the guy's just been like, hanging on. I just need to get out of this thing now. He finally gets out of it, takes a haircut, whatever. Whether you buy that one or you buy the one that's just sitting on the market and it looks brand spanker, there's always going to be something that goes wrong when you first buy an investment property. It's almost always the case. And it's just normal. The more you get yourself ready for it and just accepting of the fact, when we send a deal out with Australian Property Scout, when we send a deal out, we've always got a $3,000 maintenance buffer on every single property. And we literally factor it into the guy's numbers so everyone is fully aware of it. Mm. When they ask us, what's that for? What are the works that you haven't told us? It's like, we don't know of any works at the moment, but when you settle this thing, there is a potential that something breaks down, especially in the first 12 months. Mm. This is generally just a little buffer to set aside for the first 12 months because something's probably going to break.
Yeah.
By the time you get 5 properties in, people are like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's just what it is, life. You know what I mean? That's part of, it's like, imagine making, you get to 5 properties there. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but like, you know, you get a few properties, you get a $2 million portfolio. And then the thing has, you have a great run 1 year, you get 20% worth of growth, you have $400,000 worth of growth. Like, are you really going to complain? Because a little bit of maintenance comes along. You know what I mean? Like it's a trade-off of something you can't make in your day job.
Yeah.
You're leveraging into something else. It's sitting there on the side. It's making an extra, you know, 30, 40, 50 grand a year in capital growth. It's part of the process. You just got to understand and accept it and have that toughened hide to just be able to carry.
I think you touched on it before with people listening. When you said, would you rather buy something that needed a bit of work, but to get 20, 30, 40, whatever discount, or would you rather pay, not get any discount, not have anything to deal with?
Yeah.
Everyone every day of the week would say, dude, I'll fix some shit for $3,000 if it means I've made 30 grand, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's almost like you should be thankful for certain things. And I need to remind myself, because at first I got the emails like, man, this is just
Sammy
kick in the nuts.
Me out. What a dog.
Even though this is leading into my next point is that, whether it's your first property or if it's onto your 10th or 9th or 5th or whatever, you are going to have the same feeling, right? Yep. And it's a good reminder just to weather you to put up and understand what the big picture is.
Yes.
So if you're listening out there, for wherever you are at in your property journey, it is part and parcel. And I think you nailed that. Mm.
Don't be naive. That's the biggest thing I say. I'll leave you on that note. Don't be naive. Property investment isn't just all
sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, sunshine and rainbows and lollipops, all the rest of the bullshit. It's not, right?
It's not like the brochure.
It's a journey. The brochure sells you a dream that's not true, okay? That's right. Like, you go buy something off the plan, you probably lose $40,000. You know, so this is where you got to just be realistic. Don't be naive.
It's
a journey.
All right, moving on. We've only got a few more.
Okay.
This is the next big one. I can't do it on my own. So if
call Australian Property Scout. Done. Next question.
That is pretty much true, right?
Next question.
If you can... Serious? Is that it?
That's your answer? What else do you want me to say? You can't do it on your own?
Well, just to pad that out a little bit, if you don't have the support of your spouse or your parents, or if you're on your own, and if you don't have the time or knowledge to do it, there is always someone to help you.
Yes.
And that is like making a call to a good buyer's agent, like
the buyer's agent. Australian Property Scout, just to reinforce.
So there is no excuses if you can't do it on your own. There is you always have some support.
Always, man. Always. If you don't think you can do it, don't go out there and wing it and fuck it up. Do it properly. Yeah. And if you can't do it properly yourself, come work with the best. It might sound arrogant me saying this, but I'm dead serious. You know, this is what we do. This is what we're awarded for and what we're extremely good at. Like, we will take care of you. You don't have the confidence to do it. You don't have the knowledge to do it. Don't stuff it up. Come to us. We'll do it right
for you. Fair enough. All right. The next one, big one. The fear of failure in the sense that what if it doesn't work out?
Easy. Call Australian Property Scout. Done. Thanks, guys.
We should have finished this in the first 2 minutes. We've got 10 queries of mindset blockages. If you want them all solved, call the Bull Shark on 1-800.
Bull Shark.
Dun, dun, dun.
No, sorry.
No, but seriously.
People, I am serious. But yeah, go on.
Serious face. Worst case scenario.
Yes.
Did you ever think that when you were starting out? Like the fear of failure. Like people think.
Oh, of course.
The worst case. Like when you think about it, right? If you strip it all back to the worst case scenario, right?
Easiest thing to do. Plan for the worst.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Prepare for the worst.
What would you say for a client if they said to you, all right, I want to do this, but what's my worst case? Give me the worst.
Okay. Worst case, you go with the wrong buyer's agent or you go buy in the wrong area and you buy in at the top of a market that's peaking out, and then that thing goes down in value and you cop negative cash flow.
Okay, so you're losing money on the way in.
Lose money, cop negative cash flow. You're going to lose money when you sell.
So that's either if you do it on your own, you don't know what you're doing, or if you buy it with someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, you're buying the wrong market. Buy the wrong property in the wrong market. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. With someone like you though,
yes.
What would you say to a client if they came to you and said, what is my worst case scenario here?
Okay. You think about it. I find that hard because I buy properties for clients that I would buy for myself. We always look to buy in as close to the bottom or only a little bit past the bottom of a cycle. So we know we're in the upcycle and we're going to do well. We always manage cash flows, make sure cash flows are good. Vacancy rates are low. The yield is going to cover the property or go extremely close to covering the property in terms of cash flow as well. The easiest thing to do here, guys, is be extremely diligent with your numbers and what you're doing and don't bullshit yourself. That's the worst thing you can do.
Don't fudge the numbers, you mean.
Yeah. If you do
make
that,
it out to be a lot better than what it is.
Yeah, because that's going to burn you, right? So that's if you're going it alone, that's the thing you're going to do to burn yourself. Just be really diligent with that. Don't fudge your numbers. Be accurate with them. And then you will be able to forecast the worst and forecast the best positions. So I was like, prepare for the worst, expect the best. You know what I mean? Like go down that path and build for that exact plan.
What about we're talking numbers now, right? But worst case, the fear of failure. Have you ever thought about like from a reputational thing? Like I think there's a lot of people out there that their own fear and we're talking about mindset that if they're driving, they're investing in property, but they're driving the same car that they've had for years, or they're living at home, or
yeah,
like that kind of battle. I'm sure there's people out there. What would you say to people that are doing the work, yeah, that are delaying the gratification?
Well done.
Yeah, they still have that anxiety because they haven't reaped the full benefit of it, but they sort of get it.
Well done.
You say just keep punching, just hang in there?
Man, I drove around in shit boxes until I was 28. And when I was 28, right? So when I was 27, I sold the unit and I did the buy and build, dual lock, and I did the unit block. I had 30 grand cash left over. I went and bought myself a brand new Triton 4x4. Beautiful ute, 32 grand. Unless you put in 2 grand, I had 30 grand left over of cash profit. I went and bought it with that. I had never owned anything that was any good ever. You know what I mean? I owned an old clapped out 88 Corolla until I was about 21. And I had an old Forby. And then I had a one ton of ute. They were all shit. And you will feel like a bit of a fraud. But just remember, like the delayed gratification, there is a reason, we've spoken about this before, of what sits in my garage now that I paid for with the profits of sale of another property. You know, there's, you do this work. That's why I say well done, because you're doing what 99.999% of the population will not do, just will not ever do.
Because they don't want to delay. They don't want to delay that.
I'll get one little win. I'm going to go buy that. No, you don't do that until you're actually further along the journey and you've set yourself up properly. Like at that point, I was like 12, I think I was like 12, 13 properties in or something when I bought that ute. And I'd banked a certain amount. I was over $1 million in net equity. Like I'd done very, very well. And I think that's what's really important, man. Like, well done. That's what you want to be doing. And if you're on that path, well done. Stick at it. Stick at it until the time's right. You'll know when the time's right. When you've actually banked profit. But even when you bank profit, you want to make sure you're distributing a lot of that back into the market. Maybe go buy yourself something now.
And then your excess going, if you want to treat yourself. Yeah, but maybe don't do it too soon. Don't go and buy one property and then go and buy yourself a...
don't go too soon.
Okay.
I think this is a big thing, man. It's like delayed gratification. A lot of people hit me up a few weeks, it was a month or two ago now, I think I was at the Ferrari dealership and people were like, holy shit. I was like, yeah, man, that's pretty cool. And like,
did you get a couple of stickers?
I got a brochure. Didn't have to pay. I had to pay for the stickers. No, but it's like, I'm there, right? But the cool thing is I never went there and I always said this to myself, never going to go to Ferrari until I can actually afford to buy one, because I don't want to, I mean, there's a whole thing about, what do they call it?
Law of attraction or visualization.
The one. Yeah, visualization and law of attraction, getting in and feeling it, smelling the leather, all the rest of this sort of stuff. And that's one thing, right? But for me, I personally never wanted to go in there until I could afford one. I could have afforded one when I bought these two, you know, 18 months ago. But for me, it's like, it's still a delayed thing. I know I can buy it now, but I'm going in there, I'm just having a look. Yeah, no worries. I'll probably buy one at the end of the year. It'll probably take 18, 24 months to get here. So I'm still not going to get it way after I could have afforded it. But I got other things I'm doing in the meantime, and other you know, things I'm doing with the portfolio, with the business, all the rest of this sort of stuff. That's more of a focus for me now. But that's the level I'm at now that I can play at, and that's the level that people will get to. Because you got to remember, guys, as well, right? I was actually thinking about this morning when I was driving back from the gym this morning, and I was like, Ferrari, like, you know, we're talking like a $700,000-$800,000 supercar, right? They're not as far away as you think they are. You build a portfolio that's like 100, 150 grand passive. You throw in an extra couple of bread and butters and they're in there for sell down, and then you just bank them. And those couple of bread and butters are literally for a Ferrari. Give yourself 7 to 10 years. Realistically, give yourself 7 to 10 years. Let them run through their cycles, whatever. That's a Ferrari.
Yeah, wow.
You know what I mean? So like it's not crazy when you leverage properly or you build a portfolio properly. It's literally not crazy.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like it's...
I think the common theme here, and a lot of that is really good. There's a big problem I find with people about the income affluent, I call it, and I've read about it, is that people want to pretend to be rich and they buy stuff beyond their means and they spend all of their income and they want to pretend to have the latest Louis Vuitton and the latest car and they've got finance on this and that and they're living well below above their means to give the perception.
Yes.
So I think what you're saying, and for the listeners out there, just be mindful, that is all bullshit, right? And as you get older, it becomes more and more bullshit because you realize no one cares.
Yeah.
So do not get caught in that trap, because You're just fooling yourself.
Man, you know what's crazy? And I said this a few months ago when we did that other potty, and I said, I don't give a fuck about anyone's opinion. You get to the point, you've earned the right, you honestly won't care about anyone else's opinion. I remember back when I was playing at Sutherland Sharks back when I was like 18, 19, the dude who was a major sponsor had like 3 Lamborghinis. He'd always park it straight out the front. You'd know who he was. He'd rock up. He'd walk in. As soon as he walked past the gate, if you didn't see him get out of the Lambo, you would have no idea. He used to wear like, I don't know, Birkenstocks or something. He'd wear like these old cargo shorts that were ripped and just some random t-shirt and a yellow hat. He's looked like a random, he didn't look like a bum, but he's looked like a random dude, like someone's dad probably or some nobody. The dude's literally, he was worth like $60 million. You know what there I mean? Like, I get out of my cars, I walk into shopping center. I'm normally wearing like a $20 t-shirt and a pair of bloody gym shorts and a pair of, you know, sneakers or whatever. That's literally all I'm, like, no one would have any idea who I am on that side. And what I've always found is a lot of the time, the people who get to the top and they really build themselves up big on that front, they're normally the ones that, exactly the point you're making here, they're not going out there being super flashy and trying to prove what that they are who they are because they're there, you know what I mean? They don't need to prove it. I think it's like, it's a mental thing. Once you get there, you just don't really care.
That's a
really good point, man, you made on that one because it is super important.
The last one, just to wrap it.
You got another one?
I just got one more,
Jesus,
if that's all right.
Call it Australian Property Scout.
And this is
see you guys.
This is a really important one, right? Because I know we've gone on, but this is really, really helpful for people, is your relationship with debt and being scared of debt and the consequences of that. Did you, and a lot of people out there.
Is this its own potty?
Well, the way people have been brought up, right, in our culture.
Yeah.
Debt, nah, that's dangerous. You are high risk. High debt, high risk.
Okay, we're going to do a potty on this on like good debt versus bad debt.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's obviously two sides of the coin, right? Yeah. But in terms of good debt, guys, like start dreaming about taking on as much debt as you can. Because like I guarantee you start getting into this, you're going to get pissed you can't get more debt than what you can get right now. Mm. Because like debt is the ability to leverage and the ability to take your portfolio to a different level than what you otherwise could have taken it to. You need debt. The banks are your friends in this regard. You need debt to build what you want to build here. So you got to learn to embrace it and to love it because it is what will take you to a different level.
Is it fair to say then, if we were to break it down like a formula, that debt is essentially equals leverage, right?
Yes.
And leverage means your ability to accumulate.
Yes.
And if you can accumulate, then you're obviously going to generate wealth. So you can't connect those two endpoints without going through the leverage, which is obviously... You can write that
That's
down
very good.
If you want to use that.
I've screenshotted it in my mind, the four pillars of Gandalf the Grey.
No, but because I actually found when growing up, especially from
It's very true, man. No, it's a great point.
Because people think debt is actually, you know, when you're uneducated about debt, and I was right there, you're thinking, man, I don't want to take on debt.
Yeah, me too.
You just want to use cash. But then now I find myself, the more debt that I actually get into, because I know that I'm getting the right deals, I find the more debt I have, the less risky I am because I've got more options to de-risk by getting more leverage. And it all comes down to buying the right asset. So is it fair to say for people, the more you get understanding debt and leveraging it in the right way, you will realize the power of it and it's actually there to serve you.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And that's why, like, if we take it back to what we're talking about before, like a Ferrari, right? Like, you're not going out. The example I gave before, you pick up an extra 2 bread and butters to sell them and buy them with cash. You're not talking about going out and buying a Ferrari or a bloody F truck or something like that with debt. We're talking about good debt, taking it on, building a property portfolio. Yeah, man, you want to be behind that as much as possible because it'll take you further than you ever can. And I think the beautiful part as well is when you build a portfolio properly and you strategize it properly, there is always a debt reduction piece that comes into it, the exit strategy. So there's nothing wrong with taking on a high level of debt because what you're doing is you're buying income producing assets that are going to appreciate in value. At some point, you're going to sell them off. You're going to retire the debt. You'll use the profit to retire additional debt and you'll be in a very low position. But what you want to do is you want to embrace it to begin with because it is what's going to take you to a different level with your... You can't invest without it. You have to have a healthy level of appreciation and love for it because it's going to take you where you could never go otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, mate, I think you've overcome all of our obstacles. And for our audience out there, I hope you've got some great value out of this because...
This is going to be a long shark bite, Sepp. This one's going to go for a while.
Well, we talk about so many different things with property, and I love these intangible things. Between your two ears, that's your biggest enemy. Mm. And if you can overcome that, that's half your battle.
Yeah.
So, and people might think out there that we're going over things. And I remember we spoke about this earlier. Mm. And if you listen to the end here, hats off to you because you do have a bulletproof mindset because you obviously want something better in your life. And we're not going to reinvent the wheel every episode.
Yeah.
Often, like you think about an elite athlete, we're talking about this. If you're an elite tennis player or sportsman, you do the exact same exercises over.
Yeah.
And over.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with reinforcing like key points. And
100%.
I think the thing is too, man, like people have been sending in asking us more and more about this. So there's nothing wrong with, I think, dissecting and giving different value on this because different people are also at different points in their journeys. They're going through different things in their journeys as well. And yeah, man, I hope this has helped a lot of people, especially those starting out. It's going to be key. But even people further along, they might be five properties in thinking, I thought this would have gotten easier. And then they realize, well, the first year is always shit. You know, it's always a bit of a headache.
Well, can I ask you then, we've done this mindset piece. Yes. Around what's happening internally within you. Are we going to do another piece about the other obstacles that are outside of your own head, but the challenges you've got?
Yeah, 100%.
Dealing with all the shit in property.
We'll do another mindset one, 100%. Dealing with the shit in property. That's a great one. That's a great one. That will probably be the title. Well done, Jimmy. Well
you can have that.
Thank you.
Yes. Right up there next to the velocity of money.
Hey. Don't you guys steal my trademark shit.
Wizened
man.
Mate, I think we did well there.
Well done.
I hope, folks, if you got some value out of it, what should they do, Sammy?
Guys, as always, reach out to us direct at www.australianpropertyscout.com.au. You can find us on the socials, Facebook and Instagram, at Australian Property Scout. Guys, also in the show notes of this episode, whatever you're listening to it on, you can jump in there. There's an email to direct message us as well within that. There's a direct email within there too. Jimmy, man, as always, absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you for coming in with all your touch points. Guys, if you took some great value out of this episode, as always, I know I said about this earlier around building your circle of influence. If you took some great value, please send it on to someone else that you think could benefit from it. Or if you know someone that would take some value out of this at some other point that you maybe think, I'm going to send this to them because this is something they were talking to me about not that long ago. Send this on. You want to keep building that circle of influence, guys. Nothing is going to help you more than having a team of people around you that are willing to help take you to the next level. That includes Australian Property Scout. As a final sign off, guys, if you haven't left us a 5-star review yet and you loved this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. Leave us a testimonial. Otherwise, guys, we will leave it until next week. It's been great having you on, as always. Appreciate it, guys. Another Scouting Australia podcast powered by Australian Property Scout. Until next week, guys, take it easy.